Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, where we explore all aspects of ending relationships, separation, and parenting apart. If your marriage or partnership has ended, or you have friends and family who are separating, this podcast is for you. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor, divorce specialist, and co-founder of Amicable, the online legal service for separating couples. In each episode, we look at relationships and separation from different angles, including the emotional, legal, and social. I'm joined by experts and special guests who share their own unique stories, experience, and tips with the goal of helping people end relationships in a kinder and better way. In this episode, I'm joined by Mustafa Faruqi from Tesco, Jimmy O'Dell from OnePlusOne, and James Hayhurst, founder of the Positive Parenting Alliance, to discuss separation and the workplace. Mustafa is head of reward and workplace relations at Tesco, the leading multinational retailer with over 330,000 employees and among one of the major employers committed to a new initiative to support staff going through a separation. Jimmy is the content manager at OnePlusOne, a relationship support charity with over 50 years' experience creating evidence-based resources to help people build and maintain healthy relationships. James is the founder of the Positive Parenting Alliance and Parents Promise, having seen up close the multitude of issues in the family court and the scale and number of children it affects. We begin by looking at what your employer can do to support you during a separation, especially in the wake of the movement to bring your whole self to work. Jimmy and Mustafa touch on how to tell work about separation and how managers can best navigate these conversations. We look at different policies and practices and how your workplace can create a culture of open communication about life events, particularly how divorce and separation may impact work performance or work patterns. This is a brilliant episode for those going through a separation and people more generally, as it gives great tips about supporting and talking to your work colleagues. If you loved this episode, then please subscribe and rate us on your preferred listening platform. So James, I'm going to start with you. What can or what should employers do to support people who are going through a separation?
Oh, thanks, Kate. Well, a big question, I suppose, and one which prompted us to launch the HR initiative, which Amicable helped support and launch earlier this year, is really, I suppose, to catch up with where society has gotten to in terms of bringing our whole selves to work and reflecting that you can't really leave part of yourself at home when you're going through a kind of difficult separation. So we launched the HR initiative earlier this year to encourage employers, essentially initially, just to recognize that separation is a life event. And employers have come on leaps and bounds, and I'm sure Mustafa can talk about all the great things that Tesco do in helping employers go through difficult times, employees go through difficult times. And it felt that separation was a bit of a blind spot. It was something that lots of people go through, but it kind of isn't really talked about. So the policy that we've encouraged some employers to take up included, firstly, recognizing that it's a thing, so it feels a bit less shamey, and it feels that you can talk about something which maybe you felt you couldn't because you felt it was all your fault. And then some fairly simple principles that I think of a lot of employers do anyway, or certainly do much more post-COVID. So allowing for flexible working. So, you know, we're encouraging people to separate in a better, more compassionate way and a more planned way, I suppose. And if you're suddenly if you have children, somebody has to pick up the children and your family is the reconfiguration is different, then having flexible working to allow for that is important. And the other couple of bits of guidance that we asked employers to think about was, you know, obviously emotional counselling, pointing people to any kind of health policies they have. And then we've produced a sheet of resources that people could go through when they're on their journey, because it's often either too much information or sort of too little, really. So it's about getting the basics done well, which we know will benefit both the employer and the employee alike.
Well, we'll come on to that, James, because I think some of the benefits are really pretty compelling. But Mustafa, just bring to life then from a sort of day-to-day personal perspective at Tesco, what are Tesco doing? So James describes some principles there. What does that mean to somebody who works for an employer such as yourselves, who are actually adopting some of these policies?
Thanks, Kate. So as Jane said, all companies and Tesco's no exception are now encouraging people to bring their whole selves to work. So it did feel like a bit of a gap that we don't talk about separation and divorce as a significant life event, as James has correctly identified. So it was kind of almost obvious when he and the parents promised kind of approached us to say that employers should do this. Because I kind of looked at our intranet site and said, we must do this already, but actually we didn't. And so again, it did seem obvious to me that we ought to do that, given the statistics on how many relationships do break down in the UK. It's virtually guaranteed that someone in your workplace will go through this, and it will impact the quality of their work. And if it's not managed properly, then, you know, sadly you could end up losing someone through resignation or, you know, from some other process. So it's better for everyone, employers and employees, if we can find ways to avoid that just by being a bit sensitive and handling it a bit more carefully up front. And I think key to that is encouraging people to come and talk to their managers at the time and not keep it a secret. Separation divorce can still be seen as something a bit to be embarrassed about, a bit taboo. But I think hopefully the signal that we're sending by signposting the resources that Parents Promise have sent out to us. So we signpost Amicable, obviously, as a key resource to go and follow if you're experiencing separation, divorce, Gingerbread, Only Mums and Dads, Aruna. And we encourage people to talk to their manager at the earliest opportunity if they're going through separation, divorce, that they can understand and help them with time off, whether that's rearranging shifts or taking paid leave or unpaid leave, whatever it is. You know, we would always want to support colleagues going through that experience rather than finding about it afterwards, because it's manifesting in other ways through on the work performance or absence or something else.
It's a really tricky one, isn't it, Jimmy? People actually having the courage to go and speak to a manager and to identify that their relationship's broken down. How realistic is that? Are people willing? Because you deal with a lot of people, don't you, in terms of helping and providing resources. How willing do you think people are to actually speak up and say, this is what's happening to me?
I think people are becoming more willing to do that now. I think probably since COVID, you know, when we all went through this collective trauma, we looked into each other's homes. I think we became capable of kind of speaking up and saying, I'm struggling, I'm not coping with this. This is something that I need, you know, and asking for flexible work, maybe asking for kind of short-term solutions to things and saying, you know, for the next couple of weeks, I need to do things a little bit differently, or for the next month or so, I need to do things differently. But yeah, I imagine there probably is still a lot of apprehension for a lot of people. It's not necessarily easy, depending on where you work, what kind of relationship you have with your employers.
Do you think there is a right time? Is there an ideal time, Mustafa, to tell your manager, or is it just a personal decision?
I think I would encourage people to tell their manager as soon as they think that actually this is more than just an argument. This is now turning into something that means a relationship breakdown is more likely than not. But because it's going to be on your mind, you know, you can't completely separate work and home. And therefore, if you've just had a row, if you think you're about to separate from your partner, then and you're coming to work, you're going to be thinking about that. And therefore, you're going to be distracted. You might not be performing as well. You may be, you know, short with colleagues, appear withdrawn. And people notice that, you know, especially if you're someone that talks a lot at work and is, you know, generally lively, then a sudden change in your demeanor is going to get picked up on and people will ask. And therefore, you know, we're not saying you need to tell everyone what's going on, but certainly if you tell your manager, often if a team or someone in the team notices something's wrong with someone, they'll speak to the manager and say, oh, did you know so-and-so? Seem a bit off today. Do you know what's going on? And without breaking any confidences, you know, I can say, yeah, look, they've got something going on. I'm aware of it. You know, just give some time and space, or just, you know, if they want to talk, just see if they want to go to lunch and be supportive in that way, rather than saying, huh, no, I don't know. You know, maybe there's something I need to go and investigate and look into. It just helps make the situation more manageable. I mean, I've had someone in my team go through a, you know, extremely difficult separation with a whole host of legal issues. And there have been occasions where that person has been short with people. And, you know, because she has shared it with me, I'm able to speak to those people and say, look, she's going through a tough time. She's going through something, you know, we don't need to know the details, but, you know, whatever it is, why don't you just leave it with me and I'll speak to her about it. You know, and I've been able to give her some support in a way that I wouldn't have if she hadn't told me. And I may have assumed that it's, you know, a performance issue or a behavioural issue that, you know, would have taken a completely different approach and would have been the wrong one.
Mm. It's so interesting, isn't it? I have lots of experience of divorce. I've been through two. And the first one, when I worked at a big accounting firm, the attitude there was just take time off, kind of like, we don't want to deal with this. So you just go and take time off, take a month off. Don't darken our door with it, but you just go away and then you won't be a problem. And then, you know, years and years later, it's a completely different scenario. And we're encouraging people to actually confront it, to work with it, to embrace people who are going through this kind of trauma. And I just think it's really striking how we've moved on as a society. And we're much more willing to engage with people, to accept people for, you know, the whole of themselves, as we've sort of talked about, and who they are. There are some pretty compelling stats, aren't there, James, as to why this should be a complete no-brainer to employers?
Yes, an awful lot of stats in this area as a whole. I think when we launched the HR initiative, we discovered, I think, less than 90% of employees were unaware that their company had any sort of policy, and they probably didn't have any sort of policy. And as Mustafa said, it may be that all the elements are there somewhere, they just haven't been kind of sort of knitted together in a coherent form. And then similarly, a number of people go through kind of either kind of mental health issues or their performance suffered again in the kind of 90s during a separation. So there is clear impact on the employee that is kind of, if it's ignored, it's not going to get any better. So yeah, some really heavy stats. And also, I think we found that about 15% of people change jobs. Many of them just stop working altogether. So it becomes a burden that's unbearable. But with the right support, often employees will work. You know, they can even work better if there's lots going on. They may even be able to focus even more on work. But if you've got the right support, certainly you'll feel supported. You'll get the best out of the employee, and then you'll get kind of long term loyalty as well. Plus, it feels like it's just the right thing to do.
If I could just come in, I mean, in that example that I talked about in my team, I mean, I offered that person some time off and actually said, no, she didn't want time off. She wanted to be at work, because work was kind of a refuge. It was a haven. It was a distraction from kind of sitting around at home and just stewing about things, which she could do nothing about until the case was heard. So, you know, as you said, sometimes it's not just about time off. It's about support and understanding.
And often there was as well something that I had two different employers, both who were brilliant. One was an advertising agency, one was Unilever. But, and maybe this is where I suppose the idea came from, is there was no coherent policy. So I was lucky enough that I had line managers that were great and I felt I could talk to. Therefore, I got the support that I needed. But there were lots of people who wouldn't have either had such good bosses or wouldn't have felt that they could even have that conversation, as you said, Mustafa. So, and they, therefore, that support wouldn't have been there. But yet, if other things happen in their lives, they can look at a policy area and go, I can get some help here and I'd like that help.
It's interesting, isn't it, that there are the patient and the kind approach, the human approach is actually what's required here. It's although we've talked about it in terms of policy, it's actually being a good manager of people that's actually key to helping and supporting. And Jimmy, I know there's quite a bit of work 1+1 have done on that, haven't they? You've got OLPAC. Do you want to explain what OLPAC is?
Yeah.
The OLPAC approach?
The OLPAC approach is something that we devised to just to give managers a bit of support and a bit of help in how to handle those conversations. Because it can be quite tricky if somebody comes to you and says that they're going through a separation. You know, it's one of these topics that's difficult to talk about, particularly in a professional capacity. Maybe we don't know that person very well personally yet. And it's just this kind of reassuring set of tips, 5 tips that can help you just keep a conversation on track and ensure you give a supportive response. So OLPAC stands for open mind, which is about remembering that the situation at home might well affect how the person responds to you. So like Mustafa said, it's about noticing that behavior might change, that demeanor might change, that people might be not working as effectively as they normally are, that they might be throwing themselves into work more than usual, but just noticing what's going on. And then L is listening. So it's just about offering a safe space for people to talk, making yourself available to listen. P is patience. And this is about being aware that people are going to go through changes, that what somebody needs one day isn't necessarily what they're going to need the next day. Things might get worse before they get better. It might be that, you know, things feel kind of fine for them, and then next week actually they need to change the childcare arrangements, or they need to sort out their living situation. So just allowing space and time for that to develop. A is for accommodating. So that's being flexible around these practical changes that they need to make. So again, just allowing them to shift their working patterns around if they need to, or maybe they need to finish early one day. Maybe they need to leave at 3 o'clock this week because suddenly it's half term and, you know, their child is in a different place to where they used to be and the other parent is in a different place. And then finally, C is a culture of support. So this is everything we've been talking about. It's, you know, it's what the HR initiative is all about. And it's just having a culture embedded in your working space. And I think possibly this is the most important aspect of it, really, because even if you don't have those conversations, and a lot of people won't want to have those conversations with you as a manager, even if you don't, it's just about making it okay for people to adapt if there are personal challenges going on in their lives, and just saying, you know, this is a place where we can talk, struggle, suffer, take a bit of time off, come back, that kind of thing. So open mind, listening ear, patient response, accommodating nature, culture of support.
Yes, that's brilliant. I mean, how can people get that resource, Jimmy? Where is it if people want to look at it?
You can get that from the OnePlusOne website. So that's oneplusone.org.uk, and that's filed under Relationship Conversations, and you'll see a link to tips for employers.
Okay, brilliant. That sounds really good. Mustapha, with your sort of, not just with your Tesco hat, but with your sort of more HR general hat, how easy or difficult is this if you're an organization where either you have shift patterns or things? It's all very well to say be flexible, but how, if you're a smaller employer and you've got a fairly fixed workforce, how can you adopt these strategies? What sort of mindset do you need to bring to this?
I think in some ways, smaller companies can be a bit more agile than larger companies. I think, you know, the difficulty with a large company like Tesco is, you know, if we were to say, well, anyone who is going through separation divorce can have 5 days paid off, you know, you'd be looking at a bill of tens of millions of pounds instantly, and invariably you'd get, you know, probably some bad faith requests in there from people who just want some time off. But I think with a small employer, you know your people better and actually can be a bit more nimble. You can share work out, you know, with other team members, because everyone, you know, generally mucks in at smaller companies. And actually, people are more likely to know the person who's going through that issue, and therefore they'd be more understanding and willing to help out and just be creative, really, and find a way to cover for that person if time off is what they need. You know, as I said previously, sometimes time off isn't what they need. They just need actually to be at work and to have a bit of distraction, and, you know, have someone in work that they can talk to if, you know, that's something that they want to do. But I mean, the resources that we've shared are freely available. Most of them are charities that the parents promise have referred us to. So it doesn't cost anything, even for a smaller employer, to refer their staff to those sources of information.
And James, just sort of coming on to where you'd see this initiative going, you launched it back in January, the end of January. It's had an amazing take up initially. Where will this go? What would you like to see happen in terms of the take up and what employers can do?
Yeah, I mean, just building on what Mustapha said, it's, you know, it's a freely available resource. So if you go on the parentspromise.org.uk, there's a patronage drop down there. So there's a couple of guides that I know the Amicable guys helped us put together and put a lot of blood, sweat and tears into, which are, if you're going through separation, wherever you are on the journey, here's some great organizations that can help you and give you the right advice. And there's also then advice for kind of line managers. In terms of companies getting involved, I mean, just as many as possible. I mean, our mission, as you said in the bios at the intro, is to change the culture around separation in the UK, which is no mean path, but it really needs to happen. And that means ultimately that our children get better protected. We realize that people do separate, and we separate with compassion. And a lot of the systems, certainly as you go deeper in separation, don't work very well. Hence why we wanted to try and change broader culture, because we still think in broader culture that it's normal that two parents will fall out potentially, and just like bullying. that's just a fact of life and you need to get through it. So we wanted to work with employers because most people have a job, and therefore it could be a really important place where we could impact this kind of culture. So to answer your question directly, and anyone listening who works for a company, you know, feel free to reach out. In fact, or don't reach out. All the resources are there. Be as nimble and agile as you can be. But I think even if you could just recognize that separation is a thing and do, as you know, what you feel is right, it will make a big difference. So yeah, as many as possible, please. And there's no cost. Quite a few people email in and say, what's the cost to get involved? It's free. please use resources.
I'm super interested in the notion that this is a cultural change, because I think that, I mean, when we set up Amicable, we set out to change the narrative around divorce. For too long, it has been pitched as a battle between people. The language around separation and divorce is deeply unhelpful a lot of the time in the media and in the press. And we cling on to this idea that it's some kind of war and a fight, and that there's going to be somebody who wins and so there's a good guy and a bad guy. And so I think that changing and shifting of the cultural narrative is really important. And I think work has a massive part to play in that. When you're looking at workplace culture, Jimmy, what sort of initiatives can you do to shift that change within an organization so that it does then contribute to a different culture around separation and divorce?
I think it can be about making really, really small changes. So thinking about it from the point of view of a manager, it's a part of your team meetings or your one-to-ones where you actually sit down and spend time with the people that you work with. Think about those sessions and think, are you someone that tends to launch straight into the working agenda? Or do you take a moment to check in, ask your colleagues how they're doing? You know, do you share bits and pieces from your own life? Do you talk about what you got up to at the weekend? Do you share pictures of your holidays? You know, if you have children or your colleagues have children, do they talk about what's happening there? You know, like, do you know how old your colleagues' kids are? And if they're going, you know, moving from primary school to secondary school, or if they've just won a dance competition, you know, that kind of thing. And these are the kinds of things, like, if you know that that's going on, chances are you've already got a bit of a supportive culture going on. You're working in a place where people feel safe to share a bit of themselves. You know, it's kind of, they're turning up to work going, I can be me here. And I think having that in place then allows that space to be vulnerable and to say, you know, things now are not going well, or actually I've had a huge shock and it looks like my relationship is breaking down. So, yeah, in terms of setting up a culture, I think just think about the small changes you can make. Like, what if you don't have those things in place, if you don't really know who your colleagues are and you're not sharing bits of yourself, then that can kind of be where to start. Like, you know, you be the first one to say that you're struggling or that you've had a rough day. So just being open and demonstrating that it's okay to do that.
I think that's a really good point, isn't it? Because so often you've got this management idea that you're meant to be asking the questions and you're the one who's supposed to be sort of probing into somebody else's life. But actually, you know, to make that a real relationship, you've got to share some of yourself.
Exactly,
as a manager, yeah, and make yourself vulnerable. Yeah, absolutely. That's really sound advice. And Mustafa, from a sort of a cultural perspective then, what role do organisations like Tesco have to play in shaping the narrative and the culture around divorce and separation?
Well, when we first launched the initiative at the House of Commons, I was asked to say a few words. And one of the things I said during that speech was that I think larger employers have more of a responsibility, because people look to us and say, oh, well, if Tesco are doing it, then actually maybe we should think about doing it too. And Tesco is the largest private sector employer in the UK. And therefore, I feel, you know, we have an additional responsibility to do things that are a bit more progressive. So I definitely feel that strongly. I think the point on culture, I mean, culture, you know, as I was taught, is norms and practices. What are the things that are normal to do, and what are the practices that people engage in around here? So, you know, as Jimmy said, if it's normal to hear leaders talk about their home lives and what happens at home, then actually that sets the tone for others in the organization to say, actually, it's okay to talk about non-work stuff, and that's encouraged. You know, our CEO in the UK is actually very open about the fact that he went through a divorce a few years back, you know, and that's widely known. He's, you know, he's happy to talk about it. and his experience of that and how it impacted his work. And so, again, I think it's really important that leaders set that expectation from the top to act as role models to say that it's okay to talk about this stuff. I actually think it's harder now because of remote working. I know Jim said, and he was right, that actually it gives you a window into seeing into people's homes. But in fact, you could probably hear my kids shouting right now. But it, actually, some of the informal conversations happen, you know, at lunch or across the desk at work, or, you know, over a tea and a coffee. And if you're fully remote working, you're not going to get a chance to do that. Sometimes it is easy just to join the call and say, right, straight into the agenda without kind of checking in on people. So to the extent that roles have gone fully remote or hybrid, I think it's even more important that organizations work to change that culture and have a norm or a practice that you do check in on, you know, what's been happening at home as a matter of course.
And where do you see this whole initiative going in terms of, you know, shaping the culture externally, and how do you onboard other organizations, or how do you try and get them to sort of follow that lead that you are clearly taking?
I mean, I think it's part of a broader set of aims and objectives. So one of the recent things Tesco has done is, so a few weeks ago, we announced that all employees would have the right to request flexible working from day one of their employment, rather than having to wait for 6 months, which is what the current regulations say. Now, that is something that's about to change in law anyway, at some point next year, although the date's not been confirmed. But we decided, well, look, this is the direction of travel, but we should just go first. Why wait until the law forces you to do something? Let's just do it now. And actually what it does is it encourages people, even who aren't with us yet at Tesco, to, as part of the application process, say, well, look, I've got this arrangement. You know, it'd be really great if Tesco could accommodate that. And it's better to have that conversation up front, right? Rather than wait until 6 months that you join and say, right, now that I've been here 6 months, I can tell you about this thing that I need some time off for. You know, it's just weird. You wouldn't normally do that. And so I think it's part of a kind of a philosophy that says, look, we want you to talk about what's happening with you and what's going on with you and stuff that makes you you, so that we can work with you to try and get the best out of you. So I think doing a separation and divorce policy or thing in isolation is probably not going to have the desired impact. It needs to be part of a suite of things and a philosophy that people will believe to say, actually, no, this employer is serious about this because look at all the different things they're doing in this area, rather than just a one-off thing to try and make a headline.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think it's the whole package together, isn't it? This is just the tip of the iceberg. But it's such an important point. I know as well that one of the, it has a massive impact on the bottom line as well, this kind of stuff, doesn't it? So whilst there's the main part of this is that this is culturally the direction of travel, the right way of travel, and fits in with, you know, all the stuff that we're trying to do in terms of changing the way this is seen and dealt with. But also there is an economic argument for all of this, isn't there? James, what are some of the economic benefits of this kind of policy for employers?
Yeah, so I don't know, I'm hard fast numbers to hand, but it sort of makes common sense. As an employee, if you're going through something and it maybe is going to be traumatic, hopefully systems will change in the future, thanks to the work we're doing, Kate, but that's not going to change. So if an employer cannot be flexible, then the childcare will need to be covered. Let's hope you're not going there, but the court will need to be attended. So if the work won't be flexible, then the employee, and the stats bear this out, will have to leave. So you're kind of going to lose good people. And then, you know, so that you can avoid a negative by doing this, but there's also this positive of people, I think, will feel, and defer to Mustafa, who's the expert here, but they will feel much more loyalty, I think, if an employer is there for you during the difficult times. You'll feel that you're valued over and above your monthly remuneration. And I suspect you're more likely to be more loyal and to hang around. But yeah, Mustafa, you may be able to add a bit more to that.
Nothing other than what you've said. You know, I think we would all want to be treated that way as employees, wouldn't we? We all work for someone. And if any of us is going through separation, divorce, I think it's obvious to us the way in which we would want to be treated. And so, you know, that's the way employers should treat people. You know, it's not that difficult, I don't think.
No, and I guess with absentee rates and that kind of stuff, and obviously the not having to re-employ somebody, putting adverts out, all of that, the time, the effort of having to replace somebody who's left for the sole reason that you couldn't be flexible, that feels like an absolute no-brainer, particularly in a smaller company where, yes, it's more agile, but it's potentially a little bit more, you're a bit more on a knife edge when somebody decides to leave. So I guess it's those things that make it more of a sensible approach, if nothing else. I mean, it's obviously the right approach, but it's economically sensible.
I think that's true, but I think more and more in HR, you know, whenever I'm going to pitch new policies or new initiatives to our leadership team, you know, yes, we include the financials, this is how much it will cost, but actually a lot of this stuff, you know, our leadership teams are saying, well, this is just the right thing to do. You know, the cost is kind of almost a secondary consideration. You know, why wouldn't we do this? Because this is the kind of employee we want to be. So yes, the cost is an impact. We can say, well, if you do this, then absence will go down by X. But actually, I'm finding more and more that leaders care less about that stuff, that they care more about, well, what's the signal we're sending here? What's the culture we're trying to create in this company? What do we want to be known for? How do we want to treat people around
here?
Part
of brand PESCO, isn't it? Yeah. What the external brand looks like.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jimmy, if people are going through this and they want to start a conversation, what's the best way of doing this? So if I'm divorcing and separating, I'm going into work tomorrow, having listened to the podcast, I'm thinking, okay, I need to have this conversation, but I'm feeling physically sick at the thought of that. Where does somebody start? What are your sort of best tips for somebody in that position?
This again will depend on the relationships that you have with the people that you work with, but probably the route one is book a one-to-one session with your line manager and say, you know, I'd like to have half an hour to talk to you about something personal, so that it's established early on that this is going to be a personal conversation. It's not like they don't come in going, right then, you know, what are we talking about work-wise? You know, they know to arrive with a sensitivity. So just, you know, you can drop them an email or put an appointment in their calendar and say, do you have a bit of time to talk about something personal, please? If that feels utterly terrifying, if you feel like, no, I couldn't possibly raise this with my manager, then have a look around at your colleagues and think, who do I work with that I would feel safe sharing this with? Like, do you have somebody that you work with that you get along with that's, you know, a friend or a closer colleague, maybe somebody who works on a similar level to you, where you might be able to just broach that with them first and say, this is happening. I think I'm going through a separation, or I am going through a separation, and I need to talk to my manager about it. You know, what do you think I should do? And then it's kind of out there. It's you've introduced it into a work setting in a bit of a safer bubble, and then you can start thinking about how to escalate it to the next person.
And if you're on the receiving end of that conversation, any top tips if you're the person hearing that conversation and you're then expected to manage and deal with it? What would you say to the managers in that scenario?
Well, I mean, let's listen to the examples that you gave where somebody said to you, I'll just take some time off, and then contrast it with the situation that Mustafa dealt with, where the person said, actually, no, work is a safe refuge for me. So we come back to this, you know, looking at the kind of all-pack situation. It's about listening. And let the person tell their story, let them tell you what they're going through, and ask them what kind of support they need, because it's not going to be the same for everybody. It might be that they need time off. It might be that they need one project to be delegated and just taken a bit of pressure off them for a while. So I think just listen, really, is the top tip, and ask what they need, ask what kind of support they need. And if you do have policies in place, you know, if you're signed up to the Parents Promise HR initiative, point them in the direction of that, show them what resources you've got built into your policy.
Yeah, it's really good advice, isn't it? Too often as the manager, you feel in the position where you've got to advise or come up with the answer. And that just isn't what people need. They, as you say, they need to be heard. They need their feelings validated. They need to be asked what's most helpful to them, because we're all very different, aren't we?
So yeah, and chances are a conversation with a few open and careful questions will get to that solution anyway, even if they don't know what they need. You will get there with a conversation.
Yeah, and when we often find that, I mean, the best managers that you'll find at Tesco, and if you walk into a store, is that, you know, they're walking the shop floor, they're talking to people. And oftentimes, they're not even talking about just work stuff. They're talking about, you know, how are you? How are your kids? What's going on at home? You know, it becomes normal to talk about things outside of work, which means actually, if there is a problem, then that colleague is more likely to feel comfortable telling their manager. And it's also just kind of a normal prompt. It's, you know, if you say, well, how's things at home? And actually, you get a silence or a pause, or you get a look, you can kind of intuit that something there is not quite right. And you can say, oh, do you want to talk about something? So I think the best managers, you know, often necessarily won't wait for the person to come to them, they'll be approachable and, you know, instigate conversations about how things are going. And that may be the prompt for actually something to be discussed.
And James, just finally, I'm conscious of time. Just if you're an HR manager listening to this, what do you want people to take away or to go away doing or thinking or feeling?
Yeah, I think absorb the wise words of Mustafa and Jimmy. And I think just reflect on a lot of the conversations I had. In fact, they were almost all the same with these 8 very large companies, not all quite as large as Tesco, but all high street names, as pretty much all of them said, oh, wow, yeah, we should do this. You know, to Mustafa's point about what's the right thing to do, this wasn't a hard sell. It was wonderful that everybody went, yes. Oh, we're not doing this. We definitely should be doing this. So what we'd love people to do is just reflect, have a look at the website, which I mentioned before, and I'm sure will be in the show notes. But it's a really simple kind of basic policy that's flexible. It's about recognizing this. Have a look at the downloadable kind of worksheets, advice sheets that we've created. And and then work out how you might be able to implement that in your own place of work. That'd be brilliant.
Brilliant. Well, thank you all three. It's been wonderful talking to you about such a positive initiative. We'll put all of the details in the show notes in terms of where people can find information and resources. Is there anything anybody else wanted to add or say before we wrap?
Just one final, very simple thing, a bit of advice for managers. Just be curious, be observant, notice people's behavior, notice people's general demeanor. That way, if something is off, you'll notice the change.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Jimmy. We'll put details of all the organizations who've participated in today's program in the show notes. If you want to find out more about what Amicable are doing and myself, I'm on Twitter, which is now X. So that will date this show at Kate_Daly. And to hear about new podcast episodes, you can subscribe for updates by visiting thedivorcepodcast.com. or on your favorite listening platform. Thanks very much, all of you, for joining me today, and thank you for listening.